Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Lindsay Patterson. Although Cary Fowler is not a gardener himself, he believes that saving seeds is one of the most important things we can do for the future. As the executive director of the Global Crop Diversity Trust, Fowler is the driving force behind the Svalbard Global Seed Vault. Located on a remote Norwegian island not far from the North Pole, it's designed as the ultimate backup for the world's seed banks and a safe house for crop diversity. I spoke with Fowler about what it would be like to visit what some are calling the Doomsday Vault and why it's vitally important to have such high security for such small seeds. So if we could just start off with some background, can you tell me just a brief kind of annotated history of the development of the Global Seed Vault?
About 5 years ago, a proposal was made to establish an international collection up there as a safety net, a backup safety net for existing seed bank collections. Svalbard offers this sort of wonderful combination. It's both remote and it's accessible. The remoteness provides protection against the daily woes in the world, but you really do have to have it accessible to move seeds in and out.
What does it actually look like?
So if you're looking at the mountain, all you'll see is sort of the entrance. You'll see kind of a triangular shaped wedge building, concrete building stuck into the mountain, rather small in a way. You'll with double doors on the front. And you enter that, and when you enter, you look down a tunnel very, very far. There are several security doors along the way. And when you get to the vaults themselves, each of the vaults has an airlock door, so it's actually a double set of doors that you pass through to get into the vault rooms. And once you're in the rooms, it's fairly simple, actually. You'll see metal shelving, very much like you might see in a library, and on the shelves eventually we'll have boxes, and each box will contain about 400 to 500 seed samples that are each packed in a heat sealed envelope made especially for this type of purpose, to store seeds for a long time.
I've heard it described as kind of a doomsday vault. Would you see it the same way, or do you think that that's kind of a science fiction exaggeration?
I do think that if a large catastrophe were to strike, either regionally or let's hope not globally, that this seed vault would probably offer about as good a form of protection for the crop diversity that we have as anything we can think of. But unfortunately, you know, as I mentioned, this seed vault exists as a backup, a safety backup for existing seed banks. And unfortunately, existing seed banks lose material rather regularly. And we have over 1,000 seed banks in the world storing the diversity of agricultural crops, and they're subject to all kinds of problems, human mismanagement and mistakes and accidents and equipment failures and hurricanes and civil wars and all kinds of things can happen to seed banks, which after all are just housed in regular buildings in normal countries. We're actually losing crop diversity on a daily basis. And today, when I say that we're losing it on a daily basis, I'm really saying that it's becoming extinct on a daily basis. We're losing crop varieties, and we'll never see those crop varieties again. And any characteristics that they might have had, we won't see that again either, unique characteristics. But in the future, if we have this seed vault, we will be able to go there and retrieve these duplicate copies, this sample of seeds, and we won't have to face extinction in these kinds of situations.
So how exactly does it happen that crops become extinct?
The diversity of agricultural crops is located in two different places, or let's say two different systems. One is sort of out in the real world in farmers' fields. But farmers are not in the conservation business themselves. They're in the food production business, and they'll typically replace their varieties if they think something is out there that's better. So there's kind of a natural replacement that goes on. When that happens, a farmer can stop using his or her old variety and literally decide to make a bowl of porridge with that tonight and eat the last remaining seeds of that particular variety. And that variety can, unbeknownst to the farmer, become extinct in that process. We have no global system for identifying when a particular crop variety is so threatened, and we have no system for collecting it before it becomes extinct. Now, scientists have collected a lot of these old varieties, and so for our major crops, probably much of the diversity is now located in seed banks, which is, in most cases, a kind of a fancy way of saying a freezer. And the seed banks are freezing literally millions of samples of seeds that they've collected from farmers' fields over the year. Much of what they've collected is extinct in the farmers' fields, so it's only found in the seed banks today. All kinds of things can happen to undermine their effectiveness as well. So there are, of course, several reasons of why we should be interested in saving this diversity. The first is that I would cite is really the most basic, and that is that this diversity is the biological underpinnings for agriculture. If we want an agricultural system that's resilient, that's strong, that's able to respond to climate change, that can keep up with pests and diseases, that produces higher yielding varieties in the future, maybe varieties that don't require as much water or energy consumption, are more nutritious. If we want any of that, where do we get it? It doesn't just occur by snapping our fingers or wishing it to be. It can be found literally in the genes of all these different varieties that are stored today, mostly in gene banks. So we know that the climate is going to change in very profound ways, particularly, by the way, in some of the places where we find the most diversity on farm. So those systems are, in this century, going to come under a great deal of threat, and the farmers there are going to need access to more diversity, and I think it behooves us to collect that diversity as well and try to safeguard it in gene banks before it becomes extinct on the farm, because many of the old traditional varieties that are grown in some developing countries now will not easily or let's be honest, successfully make the transition to a climate-changed world.
Right. And when you're talking about climate change and agriculture and entire agricultural patterns are going to shift, maybe you won't be able to grow what you've been growing for thousands of years in the same place. How do you go about restoring, any kind of food security in that sort of situation?
I think that is the premier challenge that we face in this century. If agriculture doesn't successfully adapt to climate change, then all of the other efforts that we're making in other areas of life really won't matter very much. We know some things quite clearly about climate change. We know that the temperatures are going to rise. We know that crops are going to be growing in climates that are warmer than they have ever experienced since the Neolithic times. Rainfall patterns are going to change, so we know that in some areas the rainfall is going to go down and it's going to come at different times. The existing crops are adapted to certain temperatures. They're adapted to a certain amount of water and certain seasonality of water. So we're not just going to be able to move existing varieties to a new location. Where the varieties that will make it in a climate change world will be, in many cases, very new varieties. with different combinations of characteristics. So since we don't know precisely what's coming other than the broad picture, the only thing we can do is to save the diversity, all the diversity we have now, because that's going to be the raw material for all the adaptations that we're going to need to make.
So what do you imagine the future looking like?
Well, I think it's going to be a dramatically different future, and I think that future is starting now. I think we can begin to see the outlines of it now. We have a huge number of challenges, and right now we're not prepared for these. The number of plant breeders, crop breeders in certain crops is incredibly, shockingly low. We have, you know, perhaps 6 banana breeders in the world, 6 yam breeders in the world. Just to give you an idea, bananas are the 4th or 5th most important crop economically in the world. Several hundred million people depend on them as a daily staple, much as some people depend on rice or wheat as a staple. Yams, if you took the global production of yams and put it in railroad cars, it would fill every railroad car in North America on an annual basis. These are serious crops, and they're going to need to make quick adjustments to a new climate. And right now, we have 6 people who could help yams make those adjustments. The rapidity of change that's going to be required far outstrip any kind of natural selection process that can go on in a farmer's or selective process that a farmer can undertake. Right now, the collections of crop diversity we have is like a wonderful, wonderful library. But some of the books haven't been read, and some haven't even been opened, and we don't really know what we have there. And of course, the big thing that we're concerned about, because our first things first at the Global Crop Diversity Trust, is we need to conserve this material. We don't want to sit around 20 or 30 years from now saying, oh my gosh, you know, if only we had heat tolerance for wheat or this disease resistance for rice. If only we had that, but gosh, you know, back in the early part of the century, we lost that. I think our task first is to save this diversity and then to manage it properly and prepare for what obviously is going to be a very intense use of it very, very soon.
That was Carrie Fowler, Executive Director of the Global Crop Diversity Trust. And I'm Lindsay Patterson for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.